guest today is Rich Dudley. Rich, how you doing?
Good to see you again, Dave. I'm doing well.
Welcome back to the show. You have a new job since last time you were on.
I do. I'm now a senior software engineer and a technical lead at Quicken Loans.
That's in my hometown of Detroit, Michigan.
Detroit, Michigan, right, downtown. I'm actually a remote worker. We have business. My wife has business, which keeps us in Pennsylvania, so I work remotely all day long. But I make many trips a year to Detroit. Which, unfortunately, I see you more outside of Detroit than I do in.
We're going to fix that.
Yeah.
what should we talk about?
So, this job is a transition back to a bit of my roots, mm-hmm. where I'm getting back down involved at the data layer and looking at analytics and the business use of data for predictive modeling and such like that. And
yeah, data is a big deal in most organizations. The challenge, I think, is people spend a lot of time collecting data, and then all of a sudden they have all this data and they have to figure out what to do with it.
And the big trend that we see everywhere, look at every conference, it's big data, big data, big data, big data.
Yep.
But big data is big problems.
That's a reflection of that recognition by companies.
If it's not clean, and that's really where I've gotten involved in it at QL is we have all this data, we've gathered all this data for years.
Clean, what do you mean by clean?
So data can be dirty in many ways. It can be inconsistent. So somebody may have filled out a loan papers once on, say, GR'd Drive, and then the next time they want to do a refi, they may put in GR'd DR, which if you do a string match is two completely different strings, just variations on the word. So you have to go through some either sort of standardization where you run that through an address verification service and it says, all right, the post office does this. Okay, we standardize this to GRDR from GR Drive.
Or you have to do it. Then it may be east GR Drive or west.
It may be east or west, right, directional indicators.
It may be ambiguous if it doesn't have it.
Well, it's very difficult. And you look at people who try and roll their own things and it works great until you get to Salt Lake City, which is laid out in a perfect grid based on where the temple, yeah. And so you'll see addresses where it's like N400S600. And it's literally that grid, and that north doesn't necessarily translate to north per se.
Huh.
It kind of means that, but it's laid out in that grid type of thing. So if you try and do some clever parsing, your rules always break down somewhere. Another famous one is in Washington D.C. You'll see people who will do
does the northeast southwest.
Exactly, the northeast southwest, but they'll have like Northwest E Street. So if you try and get clever with your parsing, you'll end up with Northeast East Street, which is a completely East Street is a completely different street in Washington D.C. So you have to be very careful with the cleverness of what you try and build out. So there's the standardization issues where somebody's address may not match due to a small difference in perhaps the entry. Also EMS. I live in a very rural area in Pennsylvania.
Emergency medical services?
Emergency medical services, exactly. So the 911 people got tired of trying to find box 400 rural route 4, and they made everybody get a real postal service address and a real street name so that they could then map it and put pins with where things go. Because you couldn't map box 400. It wasn't a point that anything recognized really. So they had to bring in rural route pertains to the post office's system. It wasn't necessarily, there's no street sign really that says rural route 4. That's just a route that their driver goes.
And
it may be part of this road, then he takes a ride at the big cow, and it's part of this road. It's the route that the Postal Service guy goes. So a rural
route. I grew
up
in suburbia, so I guess
So that's a rural route. There's also Texas has farm to market, FM roads, farm to store, FS roads, which are routes that would be traveled by produce.
Okay, and they have different names in reality.
Right, and so EMS has come through and said, we need to lay real names on here so we know that we go 3 miles on, say, GR Drive, and then we take a left on Kalahari Road.
Okay.
Right. So we need to have standardized
names. That sounds like an awesome neighborhood, by the
way. Doesn't it? Yeah. I want to live there. Take a left at the big cow, but this time it's now a rhinoceros. So that's, EMS has come through and sort of changed all of that. So we may have records there for someone who used to be Box 300 Rural Route 4, but is now 1492 GR Drive.
And people are just used to doing it the old way.
Exactly.
Your system maybe looks the new way.
Right. Or they come in to refinance the loan and they're like, we have no idea who you are because we can't match your address up because
what are you doing to solve that problem? Is there software that'll scrub those addresses or are you doing it by hand or what?
There are, and sometimes we do it by hand. So we have other lookups, obviously, that we can pull clients up by phone numbers, email addresses, social security numbers, things like that we can pull them out of our database, but there's also a lot of services. There's some available in the Azure Data Market. Melissa Data is one that you can subscribe to in the Azure Data Market, and you can say, hey, I've got this address. What can you tell me about it? Has this been renamed due to EMS? You know, is this an existing address? Is this new construction? What's going on here? Hmm. The post office provides some level of that. There's other subscription services. That
so real quickly, the Azure Data Market is what?
The Azure Data Market is a cloud-based subscription service that you can, if you have an MSDN account, you can get some level of credits for free on that. But it's provided by Microsoft, and a number of vendors have made APIs available or made different services available to you on a subscription basis. Some of it's free, like census data is free, which is great fun to play with if you're a data nerd. And then there's for-cost services. And Melissa Data is great because I think they have like 1,000 free lookups a month or something like that. So it's a real treat if you're kind of a data nerd to get in and play
Is that are you using tools like that then?
At QL we're not using that particular one because you know we have to do everything behind our firewall. But I have personally messed around with that one, and it's easy. You know, you get to C# library, and you make calls, and it's kind of groovy.
So there's one of the corruptions of data is that street names, they change, or they have multiple names for the same street.
Exactly.
And you mentioned earlier, actually off camera, that sometimes there's a Route 5 might also be known as
Route 8. Yeah, my old commute. Route 8 is also William Flynn Highway, and both of those are legitimate addresses. Right. And a lot of services will say, yes, 123 Route 8 is a legitimate address. 123 William Flynn Highway is also a legitimate address.
And they're the same legitimate address,
it's the same exact location.
So
and so better
your
services
software has to figure that out.
Right. So better services will come back and say, hey, and I haven't tried this with Melissa Data, but they'll say, hey, this also corresponds to that because the roads have two different names. But that gets exciting as well.
Okay.
There's actually a road that I live on in the town where I live in where if you start in my town, which is Butler, and you drive to Saxonburg, it's Saxonburg Boulevard. But when you get to Saxonburg and you turn around to go back to Butler, it's Butler Street. So it depends on what end you start on is what it's known. And somewhere in the middle, there's no sign that does this. Somewhere in the middle, the post office just has this invisible line where it actually becomes that. But it's the same road when you're driving.
Where I live, actually, they have roads called things like Butler-Saxonville Street.
We have those too. Yeah,
changes in the middle.
So we'll have Mars Valencia, and then we'll have Valencia Evans City. You know, so as you go up from township to township, it just keeps changing names. It's the same road, but it just keeps changing names the whole way up. So that's one way.
So what do you address? Is your goal then to get all this consistency in your master database, or just make sure your master database is smart enough that when you analyze it, it can find?
Both.
The
ideal is if you're moving to a big data system where you're going to do data analysis, and one of the things with big data is there's a concept of shoeboxing where it takes so much effort to decide how you're going to filter out your records, what you're going to filter out, what you're going to keep, that you just end up saying, heck with it, just keep everything, and we'll filter it out in the query. But if your data are inconsistent, you end up either filtering out things you want or not filtering out things you don't want. So the consistency of the data is there. Completeness of data is another one where we may have added along the way columns to our database table, so we have to null out all the old records. And you know, so maybe we haven't in the past, maybe you didn't have, say, the suffix on somebody's name, but the senior, junior, third thing is very important to you, especially when you're discerning mortgage applicants, say. So we add that. We have nulls now. So now we have incomplete data where we haven't collected it in the past. Because it's nullable, it's not necessarily a required field in the database now. So on the application side, we have to make sure that we put something in that says, hey, and not everybody has a suffix.
So now you're talking about people here. This surprised me when you told me that you have your data has some inconsistencies among people. And the reason it surprised me is because here in America, everybody has a Social Security number.
Right, they do.
And that Social Security number is unique per individual.
It is.
And I would think that a company that's in the business of making loans would be forcing everyone to supply their Social Security number, but that's not really true.
There's a point in the process where we have to have it, where we look at your credit to finalize exactly what your rate is going to be in your payments and things like that. But before that, I probably shouldn't reveal this, but you don't necessarily have to give us the right one or one at all. So we'd have a hard time matching people up who call the call center who are just curious, like, you know, I saw the commercial and I'd really love another $200 a month, so you know, let's talk about some vague particulars of my mortgage, and then I'm going to, you know, shop around or whatever. The other thing is, so if you go to LendingTree is one of our marketing partners, you don't necessarily have to reveal all your information. So we'll get a lead from LendingTree where we can't necessarily match you up by your social security number because maybe they haven't given that to us.
I see.
You know, likewise, people.
So once you actually supply a loan, then you're going
to
have
right. a social security. Yeah, once you get to a point in the process.
The feds would require that.
The feds require
But when they're just a prospect and they're just talking, that's not a requirement.
It's not a requirement.
It's still in your system.
In our mortgage applications, you know, when you're on your iPad, if you're trying to run the mortgage calculator, you can do all that anonymously. And that doesn't feed you in as a lead, but you can create a lead from that. And you know, imagine going to a place where you'd have to fork that over the first thing. Like, I want to talk about mortgage rates. Okay, what's the most personally identifiable piece of info, the secret key to your kingdom, give that to me.
Intrusive just to have a question answered.
It absolutely is. And so we don't want to force people into that. So we have, you know, we have prospects that come in, but we want to be able to at some point in time match you up with who you are. Because you think about, my wife owns a flower shop, and the customers really appreciate that personal value. I mean, you know the people who come back week in and week out, month in, you know their birthdays, you know their anniversaries and things like that. And so you can get, we get emails that say, hey, it's Dell, it's our anniversary again, just, you know, send her what she likes. We know where it's going, we know how much she wants to spend, we know what she likes, we know all that. And that's the relationship that we're a very client-focused company. I mean, right. our prime directive is every client, every time, no exceptions, no excuses.
Mm. But it's harder because there's a lot more clients.
But with 10,000 bank, you know, with 10,000 team members and 30 million, however many clients that we have, we, you know, it's tough to maintain that personal relationship.
Sure.
So we have to have ways to match you up. And if we can't match you up, we sort of don't get that personal loving relationship to truly appreciate you. So we get to that point. It's like, oh, yes, look at this great history that we've had. So we try and walk that fine line where we try not to be too nosy, but we still need to know a little bit about who you are so that we can truly appreciate you.
Yeah, it's interesting. My very first job in computers, I was working for a company that did a lot of direct mail marketing. And so we had lists to manage, and we had to scrub these lists. And part of it is what you described already, changing drive to DR. There was software does that. Some of it was making sure that the addresses were real addresses. They matched the zip code. People put the wrong zip code in. And part of it was deduping. And deduping, for me, was the hardest thing because it was simply not possible to be 100% accurate. You had to make a decision of how fuzzy you wanted those matches to be.
Exactly.
That it's was actually the word, fuzzy matching.
Fuzzy matching is, yeah. And actually, you can get a PhD in that. And it's called Entity Resolution. And the University of Arkansas at Little Rock, UALR, a guy named John Talbert runs the PhD program down there that deals with entity resolution and information quality. And so you can get masters.
So there's this trade-off there. Do I want to err on the side of having more duplicates?
Right.
And in which case I would let's see, if I had more duplicates, then I would be potentially deleting customers.
You could be, yeah.
Or do I want to err on the side of not deleting customers, but in which case I would have more duplicates?
And it depends on what side of the equation you're on. So if you're just sending out catalogs, you probably don't mind if you accidentally combine a couple people and send one or two fewer catalogs because it's a cost savings from mailing that stuff. Mm. Versus mailing three or four of the same exact catalog to the same client, because then you've wasted money and the client looks at you like you're a bit of a dork. You know, on our end, we absolutely have to err conservatively. We can't link two clients together unless we're 100% sure they're the same one, because then somebody might get somebody else's mortgage data, and that's really, really bad.
Okay.
So we have to err very conservatively, which then enters into a new realm of if you call in and you can identify yourself and we may find two records from you, we need to have a feedback loop to a data stewards that say, hey, this client has two records. We need to join these records and we need to we make sure that we clean this up.
Okay, and this is the first time we've mentioned really human intervention.
Yeah.
Human intervention is a part of your process as well.
It needs to be, and it's more than just so data quality, data cleanliness, it's more than just the responsibility of DBAs. It's an enterprise-level thing because when we start having to talk about we need to have this feedback loop, we need to train the bankers, we need to get the buy-in from the bankers that they need to keep the data clean so that marketing can be effective, so that everything that we have is very effective. But that means that we need to schedule work, we need BAs involved, we need project managers involved, we need to dedicate engineering time. I mean, you can see very quickly, it's an enterprise-wide thing just to build that out.
Sounds expensive, too.
It can be. And then to get the buy-in that, you know, we need to do a good job. I need to be responsible with the data that I enter. And so, you know, because addresses are a text field. So the better that they can enter free text information, the better off we are. And the pressure's on, you know, to meet their numbers, but you know, we need to walk that line.
Yeah, so for this ad discretion, for this deduping, for these resolutions, there's software that exists to do that. Are you doing that, or are you building your own?
We are building our own, actually. And just because of the peculiarities of the information that we have and the way that we have to manage it. So one of the things that we have is we have Social Security numbers, which are multiple layers of encryption in our database. The upside to that is there's multiple layers. The downside is it makes it really tricky to match these records because you might encrypt them and get different values. We have to do some things where we can only decrypt them so many levels so far before it's irreversibly done. Mm. You know, so the first step is obviously a hash, and then we go on with multiple layers from there. Mm. So we can only take it back to a certain level. So not everything will handle our personal information in the way that it needs to be done. So we're building on our own. Plus, you know, we look at the different algorithms. We have multiple systems that maintain client data, and the one that handles the prospects, we know those data are not very clean. We have the servicing records, where if you do a loan with us, we'll keep the servicing free loan, so you keep paying Quicken Loans. We don't like resell it on the open market typically anymore. Mm. We'll keep the servicing as well. Those data are stellar because, you know, we have your banking information, all your legal identifiers and stuff like that. So we need to weight the information accordingly. So the information that comes from the servicing system is good. And we can apply some higher level weights to that versus the information that comes from the prospects, not so good. So we want to weight that a little bit less.
Okay, so I guess this the inference here is that if you can validate data when you input it,
yes,
that's really, really good.
That's a great thing.
So if you control everything from the start to the finish, then you can add more validation and you trust that data more.
Whereas absolutely.
If you're getting from third parties, then
the multiple layers of validation,
the quality of it, the confidence goes down because somebody else has control over it.
Right, and it's all a matter of it's all statistics, it's all probability. It's based on p-values when you start trying to match these entities up. And
I think that's the first time somebody said p-value on this show.
Woo-hoo! So, and this goes obviously back to my scientific background of working with all the statistics and everything like that. So, so we're building our own, and that's my team that's working on that. And it's been tough. We spent many, many months in the research of how we're going to do this and what identity attributes we can have and which ones we can trust, which ones we can trust from which systems, which ones matter. You know, phone numbers are tricky because people may change phone numbers. Also, we verify employment, but there's a lot of shift workers who have been employed for a long time, and they may give us the phone number for Experian, who does employment validation services.
Okay.
So they don't give us their employer's phone number because HR has told them, don't have anybody call us for mortgages. Give them the Experian number. We pay Experian to handle all of our employment validations.
Sure. Yeah. So phone numbers, I remember being tricky in my
right. Yeah. So we may have
because multiple. I may have multiple phone numbers.
Exactly.
A home and a cell phone.
You do.
And then people may in my house share the same phone.
Yeah.
And we may have different. We may both be in your system.
Well, you and the lovely missus probably have the same home phone number, but two different cell phones, right? Or in many cases, we have clients who the husband and wife have share one email address.
Yeah.
You know, and they're two completely different people. So we have a mismatch on a Social Security number. We have a mismatch on a name, but we have a 100% hit on the email address.
Right.
And 100% hit on perhaps the home phone number. So now we start looking at stuff like, how do we handle that? So now we've got to bring in additional attributes, which also gets into additional quality issues. You know, do we actually have all this information? Is it complete and is it standardized?
Yeah. Is there anything we haven't talked about that we should have?
Oh, yeah. Where'd we go? So how do you handle all this stuff? Well, there's some services out there. Master data management, like I said, it's an enterprise-wide initiative. You need to have buy-in top to bottom. Microsoft has several great products that you can
Such
look
as?
At using. There's the Master Data Services, MDS, and they have the Data Quality Services. So Data Quality Services is something that will try and do some matching and some data scrubbing as you bring things in.
Online services like APIs?
Those are actually part of SQL Server. So various flavors, and I don't know which, you know, the SQL 2012 just shipped and 2014 is on the horizon. So I don't know, you know, Microsoft starts it at Ultimate and backs it down through the features.
Okay.
So I don't know what the software assurance level is on those. But Master Data Services, Data Quality Services, they have those. The Azure Data Market is a wealth of services that will do that. Building your own is another one. That takes it takes a lot of effort, but you know, for an enterprise of our size, it's doable for us.
Mm-hmm.
where else are we going? Standardization and filling in. When you design an application from the start, you have to think through, start with the data. What does the data need to be? What do we need to require? What is nullable? What's not nullable? What's our level of intrusiveness with gathering these data? So, and we have fun with names, because American names, David is a very common man's name. I don't know of any females who are named David.
Yeah, but their names are like Jan or something.
Chris is one. I have multiple Pat. Friends where a Christine married a Christopher. So you get, Chris so-and-so, and you're, thanks for that, guys. Appreciate it. I have multiple friends who have done that. Ricky's another one. Marion is one that used to be a very common man's name. That was John Wayne's real name, Marion. But it's also now it's more common as a woman's name. So names have gone back and forth on that. And you run into things like where foreign names have come in. Alexis,
right.
Michelle's. Which sure. is a very common name in France, and a Michelle in France is usually a guy. That's their version of Michael often. But right. here in the States, Michelle is, 9 times out of 10, that's either a girl or a French dude
right.
from Montreal, right? Mm-hmm. So, yep. So, and that's where you get into the fun of that. It's all based on statistics. So, standardization, controlling your data, what's going to be intrusive, and how do you do that?
All right, you got some speaking engagements coming up?
I'll be at Codepalooza in February speaking on this exact thing. So it's called the Data Bath.
Okay.
Yep, it's called the Data Bath. I'm also working on a Pluralsight course, which will be a much more extended version showing what is the it was actually due last month, but I kind of with the new baby, it did not quite get done.
Congratulations.
So it'll be here this spring. I'll be finishing it up hopefully in the next few weeks. So Pluralsight course will have one. It is also called the Data Bath there, and it will be obviously a much longer course in what the problems are with data and what to do about it. Because in the end, the adoption. So BI strategies are changing. The analysis of data. We get into big data analysis. We also get into traditional BI. The biggest problem that you have is that your data you may not be clean. That's the number one, barrier to adoption of new BI systems or improving BI systems is the quality of data. So it's a big thing.
Thanks a lot, Rich.
Thank you very much, Dave. Coming at you live from the Kalahari, the best thing about being out in the community is sharing technology with your friends. Visit your local user group, visit your nearby conferences, but most of all, keep in touch with your friends.